So we've been talking about where we eat today, and it occurred to us that one place we don't seem to be doing a lot of eating anymore is the dining room. For a lot of people, it's a rec room or storage or really just where your nicest furniture gathers dust. But at their height, in Europe and America in the Victorian era, dining rooms were the power center of the home. One of the only spaces in your house that you allowed people to see, it's where you got to reveal what you wanted people to know about you. Your social status, your creativity, your wealth. It's where you made friends and allies, and sometimes enemies. Which brings us to the story of one of the most famous dining rooms ever, the Peacock Room. It's famous for its beauty and art, but also for its story of betrayal, obsession, and a feud that two men took to their deathbeds. Our managing producer, Sally Swift, has the story.
So when was the last time you actually ate in a dining room? And I mean a separate room, not a part of the kitchen, but a room that was designed specifically for a table and chairs for people to sit down and eat together. Where have dining rooms gone? I started to wonder about that after a visit to the Smithsonian, where I saw one of the most beautiful dining rooms I have ever been in. It's called the Peacock Room, and there is a crazy, interesting story about it that I'll tell you about in a minute. But first, I think we need to understand the historical significance of the dining room. Meet Dr. Lee Glaser. She's a curator of American art at the Freer Sackler Museum in Washington, D.C.
Well, the Victorian period was the apogee of the dining room. The dining room really comes into its own in the 19th century, and part of the reason for that has to do with the advent of consumer culture and the rise of the middle class, and along with that, an increasing division between public and private space. And so the dining room was a kind of private space that was also quasi-public. It was a space where you would invite people outside of your domestic circle in. And you know, certainly we see a lot of changes after the First World War. Not so many, you know, people who've watched Downton Abbey know this, that even rich people no longer have so many servants. But it's really after the Second World War, with the kind of complete democratization of consumer culture, the rise of convenience foods, different kinds of entertaining, the advent of television, all of these things really contribute to a much more informal lifestyle and where you're no longer embarrassed to see the spaces where food is being prepared.
Right, the interiors of the homes.
Exactly. And I would say that really probably up through the 1970s or 80s, most new construction still has like a set dining room and a set kitchen. But people don't know what to do with the dining room. They're not using it. Everyone's congregating in the kitchen. And so I think a lot of new construction now, it just has no division between those spaces. And the kitchen has sort of supplanted the dining room as the place where you show off your expertise and sophistication and so forth.
And your giant stove.
And your giant stove and your fancy food and all
no
of that.
No longer hidden.
Yeah.
What we consider a dining room today is a far cry from the magnificent room I am standing in with Lee Glaser. And the crazy story of this room, the Peacock Room, provides an object lesson in exactly what Lee was talking about when she was talking public versus private space. This is a room for eating, yes, but really it's a room about showing off. It's a jewel box. The walls are painted, you guessed it, peacock blue. The ceiling is covered in gold leaf. And there are peacock feather designs painted everywhere. It's like being inside a Fabergé egg. The dining room was built in a townhouse in London by a rich industrialist named Frederick Leyland, who wanted to show off his collection of Chinese porcelain. He hired this architect, Thomas Jekyll, to do the work. And one day, when the room was nearly done, Jekyll, the architect, turned to this guy who was working on some decoration in the front hall for some paint color advice. The guy was James McNeil Whistler. Yeah, that Whistler. Artist with a capital A. Does the painting Whistler's mother ring a bell? That guy. Well, no surprise, Whistler had some good ideas about paint color. And that is where the story turned. He took over in a seriously bossy pants way.
And everyone was pretty happy with that. Jekyll approved, Leyland approved. Whistler was pretty pleased with himself for coming up with this motif that was inspired by a peacock feather. This would have been in early summer of 1876, and the social season in London was over, and so the Leyland family went off to their country house, and they left Whistler alone and unsupervised in the room. And so that was when his imagination sort of took flight, and throughout the whole summer of 1876, he's writing the Leyland family these letters saying, I'm preparing a gorgeous surprise for you. You're never going to believe it. Everyone is going to be so jealous. And what he had proceeded to do was to cover literally every surface of the room with patterns inspired by the peacock plumage.
Whistler was telling Leyland not to come home because he wanted that room to be perfect. So when he finally feels like he's close enough to being done, he sends Leyland the all clear sign. And
Leyland was shocked when he came back to London. He couldn't believe the complete transformation of the room. He couldn't believe that Whistler was asking 2,000 guineas, a huge sum of money, for work that Leyland said he neither asked for nor desired. And then I think the straw that really broke the camel's back was that Leyland was this incredibly brooding, introverted guy, and Whistler had actually invited other artists and members of the press to watch him work in the room, because one of the problems with doing interior decoration is that it's in a private space, and how are people going to know that he's creating this masterpiece? And so Leyland felt that his privacy had been breached. He was absolutely furious with Whistler, and then Whistler became furious with Leyland.
This is now one hot mess. The room was still not finished. The prime wall space at the very end of the room was empty. And that was the site for Whistler's ultimate retaliation against Leyland's ingratitude.
So it was then that Whistler just went absolutely crazy. And so this space opposite the fireplace, it was empty because many years before, Leyland had commissioned and paid for a painting of women in white dresses. It was to be a Fourth Symphony in white by Whistler. Whistler had never finished it. And after he got mad at Leyland over the Peacock Room, he decided Leyland was never going to have that painting, which was to have been the perfection of art. And instead, he came back in the room and painted this mural of two fighting peacocks that he called Art and Money, or the Story of the Room. And they're two allegorical portraits of the artist on the left and the patron on the right. And if you look closely at the patron peacock, Leyland, you'll see that he's literally made of money. He's got breast feathers of gold and silver coins, and then the shillings that he shorted Whistler by paying in pounds rather than guineas are scattered in his feet. Mm-hmm. In platinum leaf, by the way. Platinum never tarnishes, so to ensure that they would always sort of pop and call attention to themselves.
Wow, and Whistler is quite beautifully represented in that painting as well.
He's quite beautifully represented, and he's also quite recognizable because he's given himself a platinum leaf crest feather. Whistler had this big head of dark curly hair, but a white forelock. It was kind of a family trait, and it was his trademark. Everyone in London knew him by his white forelock, and he sometimes would tie it up with a red ribbon to make it stand up. So people coming into this room for a dinner would have looked at this mural and immediately recognized who was represented. Leyland ultimately said to Whistler, if I ever see you even speaking to a member of my family again, I'll publicly horsewhip you. So by summer of 1877, they were completely estranged, and Whistler himself never saw the Peacock Room again. Now, Leyland, meanwhile, claiming he didn't like the room, must have recognized that he had a masterpiece because he never changed a thing, and he could have very easily hired somebody to come in and redo it all. So he would have been seated for the rest of his life. He died in 1892 at the head of his table looking at the unflattering portrait of himself as a parsimonious peacock.
It's a pretty amazing story.
Yeah.
Lee Glazer is curator of American art at the Smithsonian. The Freer Gallery of Art, where the Peacock Room lives, is under renovation and will reopen to the public in October 2017.